Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is the case for miracles. And to discuss this, I have a very special, not buried, but very special guest, Dr. Frank Turek. And let me tell you about Dr. Turek. He has a master's degree in public administration. He has a master's and doctorate from Southern Evangelical Seminary, my alma mater. Yeah. He actually teaches apologetics at Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's also the founder of Impact Apologetics Ministry. He's the author of two award-winning books, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist and Legislating Morality. Just a note about I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, I personally believe that's the best apologetics books available. When I recommend a book, that's the book I recommend. When I teach apologetics, that's the book that I use to teach. He's appeared on numerous TV shows, The O'Reilly Factor, Hannity and Combs, Politically Incorrect, Fox News, CBS, and he also has a weekly talk show called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist on DirecTV. Welcome to the show,
Harold.
Dr. Turek.
Great to be with you.
And
Thanks for having me. I'm
honored to have you on the show, and I mentioned that you are the founder of Impact Apologetics. Could you mention what that is?
Yeah, well, actually, impactapologetics.com is really our arm that provides most of our products that we actually create, and we create them in a ministry called crossexamine.org. And what we do there is we go to college campuses, we go to churches, we go to universities all over the world, mostly in the United States, and we present evidence that Christianity is true. Because 75% of young people walk away from the church once they leave the home. Right. And as you know, there's a number of reasons for this, but one of the reasons is intellectually they don't know why Christianity is true because we've never told them why it's true.
Right.
And one of the hang-ups, of course, is miracles. You know, we don't believe in miracles anymore.
Right.
Miracles can't occur when they go to college.
Right.
Professors say you're stupid if you believe in miracles. David Hume disproved them and all that.
Right.
So what we're talking about today is one of the things we cover, and I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, and it's one of the things we cover when we go to college campuses and churches and try and show that Christianity is the most reasonable worldview.
Right, and on piggybacking on that, miracles are, like you say, it's a significant area to deal with. I can't believe I haven't done a show on that so far. And I know that when I read your book, one of the first things you do is you try to explain what a miracle is not.
Sure, yeah.
So what is a miracle not?
Well, a miracle is not a psychosomatic cure, for example. There's at least six different kinds of unusual events out there. One of them is psychosomatic. For example, my co-author on the book, Dr. Geisler, when he was preaching a number of years ago, he had this allergy to flowers. And he went into preach one day, and he's at the podium, and he's arranging his stuff before the service, and he looks down and he sees some flowers right there, and immediately his eyes start tearing up and he starts to sneeze.
Right.
And he says to the elder, he said, "Hey, you're going to have to move those flowers here. I have an allergy. I can't preach." And the guy looked at him and he said, "They're plastic."
Right, you know? Right.
And so suddenly he realized that the problem was in his mind. He didn't think God did a miracle to cure him of his allergy. He thought his allergy was in his mind.
Right.
And he got rid of his allergy medication. He's been fine ever since. Now, some allergies are real, but others can be psychosomatic. So psychosomatic is not a miracle.
Right.
Another thing that we might think is a miracle that isn't is magic. That's human sleight of hand.
Right.
Also, other things that some think are miracles but really aren't might be satanic signs.
Right.
You know, if Satan does exist, he can do supernormal things, but they're not on the level with a miracle. Another thing that I think Christians often call miracles that aren't are divine providence.
Yeah, explain that a little bit.
Yeah, because that's very interesting. A lot of people will say, well, it's a miracle I met my wife or I met my husband or something. You know, God arranged events so I met them. Yeah, he did, but he didn't overpower natural law to do so.
Right, right.
Another example of divine providence might be, say, the fog at Normandy.
Right.
Right? It seemed to have a spiritual context. We thought we were on the good side and the Nazis were on the evil side, and God maybe brought fog in to obscure our attack there. But it wasn't a miracle. A miracle would have been if they had attacked Normandy and bullets bounced off their chests.
Right, right.
Right. That's not a miracle.
Right.
Another unusual sign is an anomaly. For example, many times, for a long time, we didn't know how the bumblebee flew, because it had a wingspan that was too short for its body. and we couldn't figure out how it flew. But bumblebees flew all over the place, and we finally figured out a bumblebee had a kind of a power pack on it, and that's what allows it to fly. But before we understood that, it was an anomaly. We couldn't figure out why a bumblebee flew, but we didn't say it was a miracle.
Right.
So you got those five things that aren't miracles: magic, psychosomatic, satanic signs, anomalies, and what was the one I left out? Providence, divine providence.
Right.
What is a miracle is when God enters into the natural world and overpowers a natural law.
Okay.
Like he resurrects Jesus from the dead, or he has Jesus walk on water, or he has Jesus resurrect somebody from the dead, or he heals somebody instantaneously. That would be a miracle.
Now, why is miracles, or why are miracles important for Christianity?
Well, if miracles don't occur, then Christianity's false. I mean, the central miracle in Christianity is the resurrection. If that didn't happen, as Paul himself says, if he didn't rise from the dead, forget it.
Right.
Might as well sleep in on Sundays, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So then why should we believe in miracles? What's your argument for miracles?
Okay, well, I think one of the most powerful arguments for miracles is the fact that the question I always ask people is what is the greatest miracle in the Bible? And people have trouble with miracles in the Bible. They have trouble with resurrections because everyone they know who's dead is still dead.
Right.
They have trouble with, say, parting the Red Sea. Come on, that doesn't happen. We don't see it happening today, right?
Right.
They have trouble. The big miracle that people seem to have trouble with in the Bible is Jonah. You know, is that a tale of a whale or a whale of a tale? What's the deal with Jonah? Can you really believe? That seems so outlandish.
Right.
Come on. Well, I always ask people, what's the greatest miracle in the Bible? Most people will say, what do you think?
Probably parting the Red Sea.
Yeah, or the resurrection. Usually Christians will say the resurrection.
Right.
They say it is the greatest miracle in the Bible. And I always say, well, that's an easy miracle compared to the greatest miracle. Because the greatest miracle in the Bible is the first verse. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Right.
If that verse is true, then every other verse is at least believable. We now have good scientific evidence, Harold, that the first verse is indeed true. That space, matter, and time came into existence out of nothing. This is what all the cosmology shows, the Big Bang cosmology. It shows that space, matter, and time literally came into existence out of nothing. If that's the case, then the cause must be outside of space, matter, and time. As I know you teach in your apologetics class.
Right, right.
You know, it must be spaceless, timeless, and immaterial. And also personal to create something out of nothing and make a choice to do so. It's got to be powerful to create out of nothing. It's got to be intelligent to do what it did with such incredible precision. And I shouldn't call it an it because it's got to be personal,
right?
To go from non-existence to existence, someone has to make a choice, and only a personal being makes a choice. So you've got a spaceless, timeless, immaterial, powerful, personal, intelligent creator. That's what we mean by God.
But they do go hand in hand, because if you don't believe in God, then you can dismiss miracles.
And
if someone says, well, you know, I can't believe in miracles because I can't believe in God. But if you believe in God, as you say, then it goes hand in hand that miracles are at least possible.
Yes, yes. Not just do you believe in God, but is there evidence that God exists?
Right.
That there's a being outside the world who brought it into existence, and it seems to me there's very good evidence of that. So if the first verse of the Bible is true, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, then every other verse is at least possible. I'm not saying at this point every other verse is true. I believe it is. But just because you have a God out there who can act doesn't mean that every act of God in the Bible actually occurred. I do believe they have, but I have to give evidence for that,
right?
So I'm just saying miracles are possible at this point if God exists. As C.S. Lewis put it brilliantly, as he normally did, he said, if God exists, or how did he put it? If God exists, then miracles are possible. You have no security against it. That's the bargain, right?
Right.
I mean, if there's a God out there who created the universe out of nothing, can he do whatever he wants? It's not logically impossible inside the universe? Of course, right?
But here's the thing. Someone would say, well, okay, just because God can do miracles, how do we know that he did?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, for that, you got to look to eyewitness testimony. And what we do in the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, is we point out that the evidence shows that there is this all-powerful being who created the universe. So miracles are possible. The greatest miracle in the Bible, the first verse, appears to have already occurred. The question now is, have subsequent miracles occurred? By showing that the first verse is true, we just have the possibility of miracles. Now we've got to get evidence that subsequent miracles have occurred, and that's when we look at the New Testament documents to see if they really tell us the truth about what happened about 2,000 years ago. Is that good evidence that the miracles of Jesus, for example, really did occur?
Right. Well, you know what someone's going to say. Well, you know, people back there, they were ignorant. They didn't understand science. So we really can't trust their eyewitness testimony because they didn't know what they were looking at.
First of all, they weren't ignorant. If you read Luke, Luke was one of the most confirmed historians of ancient times. Even Sir William Ramsay said that, who was a great archaeologist. Colin Hemmer, who was a Roman historian, went through Luke with a fine-tooth comb, particularly the book of Acts, and found that he was right. He had 84 details in just the second half of the gospel, or I should say the book of Acts alone, obscure details that only an eyewitness would know, and those details have been confirmed by archaeology or secular sources or just geography and topography. We know Luke was an eyewitness and told the truth in those matters. I think it was Sir William Ramsay who said something like Luke named 54 cities and 45 countries. Or he had this long quote where he said, Luke got it all right. So Luke was not ignorant. Luke knew where babies came from.
Right.
And so did Joseph. Joseph, who was, of course, Mary's husband, wanted to put Mary away.
Right.
I mean, he wasn't saying, I think God did this until an angel appeared to him. And then he said, okay, maybe God did. So these people weren't ignorant.
Right.
They knew. Look, let me put it this way. If they were so gullible as to believe in miracles that didn't occur,
right,
then it would seem to me they wouldn't have gone to their deaths for saying that they did occur. These people,
right,
knew the implication of miracles, and the only way they could knew the implication of miracles, that they were acts of God, would be their prior belief that these things just didn't occur unless God exists,
right?
I mean, if they thought miracles occurred all the time, they wouldn't have thought that the miracles in the New Testament were any big deal.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so the reason they went to their deaths and suffered brutally for saying miracles had occurred was because they knew these must come from God,
right?
Because they didn't happen all the time. So this whole idea that they were gullible, nonsense, makes no sense at all.
So what's the purpose of a miracle? Why would God perform miracles?
Well, that's a good question. And the question I always ask people about that is, let's go back to the Middle Ages before there was any ability to communicate electronically. If one king wanted to communicate with another king, what would he send to the other king, who was a great distance away?
A letter.
A letter. And what would be on the letter?
His seal.
A seal, right? Exactly. There'd have to be a seal in the letter that would authenticate to the king receiving the letter that the first king actually sent it. Because that seal had to have a couple of characteristics. Number one, the seal had to be unique to the king. And secondly, it had to be hard to forge. Because if somebody could forge it, then anybody could send false messages from the king. It seems to me that's what miracles do, Harold. They are a seal that authenticates that this message comes from God. Only God can do them, and they're hard to forge. You know, it's hard to do a miracle, quite obviously.
Right.
So a miracle is like a seal from God. And miracles in the Bible are normally there to confirm a messenger from God. The miracle confirms the message, the sign confirms the sermon. I mean, how are people going to know that a particular guy speaks for God? God will pour out miracles through him. This is what Moses even says to God in Exodus. He says, I'm going to go to Pharaoh Pharaoh's just going to let my people go. Well, why is he going to do that? And God said, hey, you'll do some miracles. I'll do miracles through you so Pharaoh will know that you speak for me. So the miracle confirms the message, the sign confirms the sermon, and if you look through the Bible, it's very interesting. People think miracles are happening in the Bible all the time. They're not.
Right, yeah.
There's about 250 instances of miracles over a period of about 1,500 years from, say, Moses through Jesus. And if you do the math, it's less than one miracle every 5 years. But they don't occur one miracle every 5 years. They occur in bunches. They occur around Moses, Elijah and Elijah, and Jesus and the apostles. Why? Because each one of those areas, there's new revelation being given by God. So how are people going to know Moses speaks for God? God does miracles through Moses. How are people going to know Elijah and Elijah speak for God? God does miracles through Elijah and Elijah. How are people going to know that Jesus and the apostles speak for God? God does miracles through Jesus and the apostles. So you don't have this even distribution of miracles over biblical history. You have them occur in bunches because the new message needs a new miracle. The new sermon needs a new sign, so people go, aha, this speaks for God.
So miracles can be used to confirm a message from God, but is that necessary? For instance, we hear about God healing people today,
right. Yeah.
But he's not necessarily confirming the message.
True.
Can
True.
We say that those are legitimate miracles?
Oh, they could be. Sure, yeah, there could be miracles that occur today. The main purpose for miracles doesn't always have to be a sign confirms a sermon or a miracle confirms a message. It could be that God heals people today directly, not through people. He just heals them because right. That's his will. But in the Bible, it seems that most of the miracles that occur are there to confirm that this individual speaks for God. You know, Paul, for example, had a thorn in the flesh. He couldn't heal himself. Paul at one point said, pray for Timothy. And he told Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach. Mm. Why didn't he just heal him? Well, maybe because Paul at some point had lost the ability to do miracles, or God had taken away the ability because he had already been confirmed as an apostle and he couldn't just do it at will anymore.
Right.
So I'm not saying miracles don't occur today. They may in fact occur today.
Right.
But in the Bible, miracles appear to be signs that confirm the sermon, or they're there to confirm the messenger as this individual truly speaks for God.
Well, and that brings up the question, you've already touched on it, but people will say, you know, well, why don't we see these type of miracles today? I mean, I don't see
right.
anyone walking on water today. I don't see the Red Sea dividing
right.
today.
Right, well, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it's not happening. But I would say, and Christians disagree on this, some Christians say miracles like that are happening today. Personally, I've never seen one. I don't
right.
know if you have or not.
No, I have never seen one.
But they may be. However, it seems to me that the miracles of the Bible, as I say, are there to confirm a message from God or a messenger from God. So if miracles don't occur today, that's fine, because maybe God doesn't have any new revelation to confirm.
Right.
Right. So, but of course, God can do a miracle anytime he wants. I think we have to distinguish here between the gift of miracles and miracles, the fact of miracles.
Right.
God can do a miracle anytime he wants. That's the fact of miracles. But does somebody today have a gift for miracles like, say, Paul had?
Mm.
I don't think so. I haven't seen anybody with it.
Right.
Otherwise, that person would be going around empty in hospitals.
Right.
Right? And they're not doing that.
Well, let's get some of the objections, because
yeah.
there are a lot of objections
yeah,
to
exactly.
miracles. And one of the biggest ones is Benedict Spinoza. He came
yep.
up with a very powerful argument against miracles. And his argument goes basically like this. Miracles are violations of natural laws.
Mm-hmm.
Natural laws are immutable, meaning they don't change. It is impossible to violate immutable laws. Therefore, miracles are impossible.
He's begging the question. How do we know natural laws are immutable? First of all, natural laws don't do anything. They're just descriptions of what normally happens. They're descriptive. They're not prescriptive. Natural law really, really just describes how the four natural forces work together: gravity, the electromagnetic force, and the strong and weak nuclear forces. But natural laws themselves don't do anything. They're just our descriptions of how the natural world works.
Right.
But if God created the universe, he can certainly intervene, and he created the natural laws, the natural forces. He can certainly intervene in them anytime he wants. He can overpower them. In fact, we can overpower them. We can overpower natural laws. For example, if a baseball player catches a falling baseball, he's overpowering the law of gravity. An agent can interact and overpower a law of nature.
Right.
Okay. If we can do it, why can't God do it? God, of course, can. So he's just begging the question by saying that natural laws can't change. How does he know that? And first of all, natural laws wouldn't really be changing if somebody...
Yeah, that's a good point.
If somebody intervenes... The law doesn't change, just the intervener has done something.
Right.
C.S. Lewis gives an example of this, and so does John Lennox. He says if John Lennox gave it in his debate with Richard Dawkins in Alabama, he said, if I went to my hotel room and I put $50 in my drawer, and then I come back to my hotel room later and the $50 is gone, the laws of mathematics have not been violated. The laws of Alabama have, right? But the laws of mathematics haven't been violated. It's still, if I had $50 in there, I should have $50 in there when I get back, unless somebody, an agent, came in and took it away. Or say I had 50 in there and I came back and there's only 20.
Right.
Well, 20 plus 30 still equals 50, but somebody took 30 out.
Right.
Okay. So the laws aren't violated.
Yeah. And when an example agent is that involved. You use with the baseball, me catching the ball didn't change the law of gravity.
No, you just overpowered it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We do it when we fly a plane too.
Now, of course, well, the next argument is probably the best argument, or it's the argument I see the most. Matter of fact, preparing for this interview, I did a search on arguments against miracles.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were a variation on David Hume's argument, because it's considered the best argument against miracles.
Right.
So let me just state it and let you respond. Natural laws are, by definition, a description of regular occurrences. And this is in your book very well. You do a very good job explaining your book. A miracle, by definition, is a rare occurrence. The evidence for the regular is always greater than that for the rare. And a wise man always bases his beliefs on the greater evidence. Therefore, a wise man should never believe in miracles.
Well, if those four premises are true, then the conclusion follows, and the wise man should never believe in miracles. The problem is that the third premise, that the evidence for the regular is always greater than that for the rare, is false. Because there are occasions where the evidence for the rare is good enough to believe in. And in fact, if Hume were here today, he would believe in, say, the Big Bang. Yet the Big Bang only happened once. Yet we all have good evidence to believe. In other words, it's a rare event, like a miracle, but we still have good evidence to believe in it. He would believe in probably macroevolution. But we don't have any evidence. We can't do it over and over again. In fact, we don't even have any evidence it's true now, macroevolution, in the sense that we can go in the laboratory and do it over and over again. It's a one-time event if it happened. So is the origin of life.
Right.
C.S. Lewis puts it this way. He says the whole history of the universe can't be repeated, but Hume should believe it. In fact, his own birth can't be repeated.
Right.
Yet he should still believe in it. So the problem with Hume's argument is that he doesn't really deal with the possibility of miracles. He's trying to say that you ought not believe in miracles, right?
Right.
Because he says the wise man ought not believe in miracles. Well, the problem here is that he's talking about believability, not actuality. There's a problem with an argument that says you ought not believe something that actually occurred.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I remember Dr. Geisler was mentioning this, and he said that according to Hume, if you saw the resurrection, you should not believe.
Yeah, which is silly. Right. If you saw a miracle yourself, you shouldn't believe it because it's a rare event. Well, look, think about it this way. In order for miracles to get our attention, they have to be rare events.
Right.
You know, if they were regular events, we'd think they're part of natural law.
Right.
The very fact or the very characteristic of miracles, rareness, is something that Hume says makes it so we can't believe in it. So he's defining out believability before he even looks at the evidence.
Right.
If a miracle wasn't a rare event, we'd have no reason to believe it. And if a miracle wasn't a rare event, it wouldn't get our attention as being an act of God. That's one reason why I think the resurrection is so unique. I don't believe that there are resurrections going on today. If they are, well, they're very rare. Right. If resurrections happened all the time, then what would be the great thing about Christ's resurrection? It wouldn't get our attention. It's got to be a rare event to get our attention.
Right. And I want to add something to this, because I've had a student of mine ask me this question where he says, well, there were other people who came back from the dead in the Bible as well. You know, we see the other people being healed. And
Lazarus.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And the point I want to make is that they're still dead.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They did die.
Yes.
I mean, and Jesus never did die again.
Yeah.
That's what's unique about Jesus's. It was actually a resurrection, whereas the other ones we could classify as resuscitations.
Exactly.
Which is a little bit different.
Yeah.
So respond to the argument, I wasn't there to see the miracles, so I have no reason to believe they actually happened.
I wasn't there to see Lincoln shot in Ford's Theater. Do I believe it happened? I wasn't there to see Washington sworn in his first inaugural address. Should I believe it happened? We base virtually everything we know about history on eyewitness testimony and historical documents.
Right.
So to say that you can't believe it because you weren't there, you couldn't believe virtually anything that you weren't. I wasn't there to see my car built, but I believe it. I believe it was built.
Right.
I'm driving it around right now, you know?
Right.
So we take a lot of what we believe on authority from history, and we got to look at the evidence to see if it's good history. And that's what we do in the book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist.
Yeah. What about responding to the argument that all religions claim to be backed by miracles, so wouldn't they sort of like cancel each other
out? First of all, not all religions do claim to be backed by miracles, but those that do, you have to look at them on a case-by-case basis and see if the evidence that they say supports their worldview is good. And I have not seen good evidence for miracles in other world religions, particularly Islam. Muslims try and say that Muhammad did miracles, but Muhammad in the Quran says he doesn't do miracles. Right. The miracles attributed to Muhammad were attributed to him in the Hadith, the written traditions, which came 100 to 150 years later. There's no eyewitness evidence that Muhammad ever did a miracle, but right, there's good eyewitness evidence that Jesus did miracles.
The last question, respond to the argument, I refuse to believe, and this, I found this one on the internet, this was really interesting. I refuse to believe in a God who would waste a miracle on a weeping statue and not lift a finger to heal a child dying of cancer.
Well, first of all, I don't think that weeping statues are miracles.
Right.
And secondly, the whole problem of evil situation here, God may have morally sufficient reasons to allow evil to occur.
Right.
And, you know, that's a whole nother program.
Is,
we can't get into that right now.
Right, and I've done some.
But that's
that.
A volitional point. And the question that you should ask people who say that is, let me just ask you one quick question. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian?
Right.
If they say no, it's not just here, it's here. They right. don't want it to be true. Right.
Well, Frank, believe it or not, we've actually come to the end of the show.
All right.
So
that's a miracle we got all that in.
That is. And and I've been sitting here talking with Dr. Frank Turk. And the topic has been the case for miracles. And that will end this episode of Next Time. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
You can find out more about Giving an Answer, as well as listen to other episodes by visiting us online at www.givinganswer.org.